The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are always glad you stopped by the show. Always glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about some relevant issues. We've got an election coming up. Only in a few days, we'll be voting for the next president. And a lot of times people are wondering not only about all the issues, whether it be health care or whether it be immigration or building the wall or whatever the case is, but a lot of things that we're focused in on are the military issues, our defense issues, our national security issues. People are wondering what are going to be the differences between the two candidates. What are they going to do in terms of military spending, in terms of it's going to be a buildup with the military? Is it going to be a drawdown? Are they going to engage in other theaters more with China, Iran, and other areas? What are the differences between Trump and what are the differences between Clinton and whoever becomes president? What are they going to do with our military? People are asking these questions. We've got on the line with us John Harper. He's a senior writer at National Defense Magazine, and he'll tell you where you can find that. Find their magazine, but it's a great magazine done by National Defense Industrial Association. And so we've got him on the line. He wrote an interesting article about Clinton versus Trump, the implications for defense. Hey, John, welcome to Fed Access.
Great. Thank you for having me, Derek. Appreciate it.
No problem. Hey, John, kind of break down right now in terms of, you know, people understanding what's the current status as it relates, especially with the Obama administration? What's the current status in terms of, our defense, our military spending? Where we are right now so that we can kind of swing into where are we going with the two candidates?
Sure. Right now, U.S. military spending, once you factor in nuclear weapons, sustainment, and other things, is around $600 billion. And right now, the House Appropriations Committee has passed its version of the fiscal year 2017 Defense Appropriations Bill. The Senate has not yet passed its version due to a deadlock between Democrats and Republicans, primarily over non-defense spending. And so to get a final defense appropriations bill, the two chambers, the House and the Senate, would have to go into conference and agree on a common bill and have it pass both houses and go to President Obama's desk. President Obama has threatened to veto the proposed appropriations and defense authorization bills over disagreements about some of the policy provisions and the way that the funding would be allocated. So we're at kind of a stalemate right now. The Congress passed a continuing resolution to keep the government funded through December 9th. So once the election is over, lawmakers will come back to Washington, and people hope that they can pass a budget for fiscal year 2017. Under the continuing resolution, funding is basically locked in at fiscal year 2016 levels, and that prevents the Defense Department from doing things like, you know, increasing production for certain weapons platforms, kind of locks in what they can invest in. So they're hoping to get a regular budget passed.
You know, when we think about this right now, I mean, that has been a constant issue for military leaders, that we keep on going through sequester and sequestration, and then the budget is only passed for a few months, and so no one can get any kind of long-term stability with the defense budget. Are you hearing that as a national security issue when you're talking to different people in the community constantly?
Absolutely, and that's what everyone harps upon, you know, and it's not necessarily just the total budget numbers, the top line. It's the ability to plan years in advance. You know, the Pentagon has something called the Future Years Defense Program, and it's basically a five-year plan for, their budget blueprint in the coming years, what they want to invest in, how much they want to spend. And with sequestration always looming over the horizon, you know, that makes it difficult for them to do long-term planning. The continuing resolution, also known as the CR, is also a source of consternation for defense officials because, as I noted earlier, it locks in spending while the CR is in effect at the previous year's funding levels, and it also restricts, you know, what new starts they can start investing in. For example, it would limit their ability to increase the number of joint strike fighters that they want to build, and it locks in certain types of investment at previous year's level, so it makes it more difficult for them to allocate the money in a manner that they would like to allocate it.
You know, when we look at the two candidates, let's start breaking them down. What's Donald Trump's vision in terms of the military, in terms of spending? Where does he want to go with this?
Well, he has called for getting rid of sequester, which at this point would go back into effect or is slated to go back into effect in fiscal year 2018, and it would last under current law through fiscal year 21. So he has called for getting rid of the sequester, which Secretary Clinton has as well. Based on his rhetoric, you know, he has said that, you know, the U.S. military is in a disaster, you know, indicated that it needs to be rebuilt to a certain extent. He has called for increasing the size of pretty much all the services, especially the Navy, calling for a fleet of 350 ships and submarines, up from about 270 plus today. The Navy, you know, is on a trajectory in the next decade to get up to about 308 ships. So a 350 ship Navy would be much bigger than the current one and much bigger than the one that is currently planned. He's also called for increasing the number of fighter aircraft in the inventory, increasing the size of the active duty Army by about 50,000 troops, increasing the number of Marine Corps battalions from 23 to 36. So he's calling for a major military buildup based on, you know, some of his recent statements.
And, you know, John, I mean, as we begin to look at this, you know, as I'm thinking about it, and we've got the kind of the BCA, the Budget Control Act and everything else. I mean, that amount from, you know, 308 to 350, and the amount of troops build up and the Marine Corps and the Army, and also even that would even mean more Navy personnel if you've got that many ships out there. What are we talking? We're talking about a major increases. And major increases that are going to go well beyond the Budget Control Act, aren't we?
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of question and a lot of doubt as to whether such a buildup would be affordable. I mean, even under the Obama administration's current plan, you know, that budget proposal would exceed the Budget Control Act caps by about $113 billion over the next few years. And it sounds like Trump is proposing to spend even more money. So the question becomes, you know, where is that going to come from? You know, would it require tax increases, more deficit spending? It would obviously require, you know, a major budget agreement between Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill. And as everyone knows, in recent years, you know, those have been tough to come by. So there's a lot of, you know, uncertainty as to whether Mr. Trump would be able to implement this plan if he were elected.
You know, when we think about this and kind of thinking about what's going on, you talk to military leaders all the time. Are you hearing that the military is saying that they want this level? I mean, when you look at these numbers, a 350 ship Navy, when we look at kind of the increasing of the Army and the Marine Corps, are you hearing the military leaders say we want this level of increases, or what's coming out of the Pentagon, or what's coming out of the different military leaders who you talk to on a regular basis?
Well, military leaders would definitely like to see an increase in the size of their force structure. They haven't addressed, you know, specifically Trump's comments or his plan, as far as I'm aware. But the Navy is undergoing a review right now of its force structure, and they're expected to call for more than the 308 ships that they're planning for right now. Army leaders, you know, continually say that their force is trimmed down, and there's a lot of strategic risk. The Army has really borne the brunt of a lot of the budget constraints. The size of the force has shrunk significantly since the height of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and their modernization budget allows for very few new starts in terms of the major equipment modernization that they say they need. They're also raising concerns about the level of training and readiness, and whether the Army, as it currently stands, would be able to handle some of these higher end threats that China or Russia could potentially pose, in the event of a conflict after 15 years of fighting insurgencies. Some people are raising questions as to whether the Army and some of the other services, to some extent, are ready for this high-end fight that some observers, anticipate might happen in the coming decades. Obviously, no one wants to see a major war.
And John, hold that one second. I want to get into these issues when we come back. We got to take a quick break. We're talking to John Harper. He's a senior writer at National Defense Magazine. You can find him at nationaldefensemagazine.org online. He wrote an article. John wrote an article called Clinton versus Trump, Implications for Defense. It's in the October issue. Interesting article that really kind of breaks down the vision of each one of these candidates and where they're trying to go right now in terms of military spending, and also handling some of the national security threats that are looming as we go into the future years. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about a very, very relevant issue. We are all going to be voting very, very, very soon. And we are all concerned about a number of different issues. But one of the issues that most Americans are concerned about is national security. And we're thinking about, what are our candidates going to do as it relates to national security? What are they going to do in terms of military? Are they going to enhance the military? They're going to increase spending. Are they going to give them new weapon systems? We've got a number of threats that are looming out there right now. If anyone follows the news, whether it be terrorism, China, North Korea, there's a number of different situations that the new president is going to have to contend with. And we want to know what's going on with them. We're talking to John Harper. He's a senior writer at National Defense Magazine. That's a magazine of the National Defense Industrial Association. You can find it at nationaldefensemagazine.org. In the October issue, this issue of this of October, John wrote an article, Clinton versus Trump, Implications for Defense. And so he's broken down what the visions are for each one of these candidates. And hopefully it can provide some insight as we're trying to make decisions on who we want to be the next president. Hey, John, we were talking about kind of spending and we were going into the candidate Trump. When we look at kind of China and you were starting to go into that right before we had to take a break. What is Trump saying that, he talks about China a lot. What is he saying that he wants to do as it relates to dealing with China on a military level?
Right. Well, much of Trump's comments have been focused, on the trade relationship between the U.S. and China. He argues that the U.S. is on the losing end of that. In terms of the military, he hasn't commented on that as much, although given his hardline rhetoric on China, we might expect him to take a more confrontational posture relative to what the Obama administration has done in recent years.
When we think about, the dynamic, and he has mentioned a lot of trade issues, but let's swing over to terrorism. That is one area that both candidates have been talking about very, very much so. What is Trump talking about in terms of his strategy? We see what's going on right now in Iraq, and we see forces moving in on ISIS. The generals, the current commanders, are saying that is going pretty well, although they've had a couple, setbacks and other things of that sort. But they say they're within a mile. They're closing in on ISIS and hopefully being able to take over all the cities. But what is Trump saying about this?
Well, Trump has accused the Obama administration and, also Secretary Clinton, by connection, I suppose, of being too soft on ISIS. He has said that he would bomb the snot out of ISIS, although he didn't use the word snot. He used another word.
That's a good word that we can put in substitutes, a light snot.
So he has sort of implied that he would expand the air campaign, although the Pentagon has already carried out more than 15,000 airstrikes against ISIS since the war began. So, you know, it's unclear, you know, to what extent, you know, there are a lot more targets to hit, you know, or whether the pace of operations, you know, could be increased to have a significant effect on the battlefield. The U.S. military is already hitting ISIS pretty hard, taking out a lot of their senior leaders, as well as their sort of regular foot soldiers. So, you know, it's unclear to what extent Trump would actually escalate that or even be able to escalate that if, you know, there are only probably a certain number of targets that would be available to hit. He you know, more generally in terms of terrorism, has, you know, called on restricting the number of Syrian refugees coming into the United States, or actually banning them from coming into the U.S., called for a more closely monitoring Muslim communities in the U.S. He's also called for reinstituting waterboarding, which the Obama administration ended and a lot of people view as torture. He's also in the past called for killing the families of terrorists or suspected terrorists. So,
John, when you hear, because a lot of these things have been controversial, right? And when you hear Trump saying this, and I know that no current military leader would come out and just kind of say it, but some of these things are controversial. Some of these things have been deemed, you know, illegal, or they're, you know, close, or whatever the case is. Do you hear concern amongst military leaders that this is maybe going too far, or are people saying, hey, this is what we need to do and kind of go back to that time right after 9/11?
Right. Well, you know, the CIA was sort of, you know, the primary agency that was conducting the waterboarding. It wasn't as much the U.S. military. There doesn't seem to be, you know, much appetite among the U.S. military for engaging in waterboarding at this point. There's certainly opposition to the idea of targeting terrorist families, you know, people who would be considered, you know, civilian non-combatants. That would violate the laws of war, and, you know, under current law, you know, U.S. military personnel would actually be required to, you know, refuse to carry out such an order.
You know, as we look at kind of, there's been a lot of talk as it relates to NATO and our alliances and other things like that. And NATO is in the war, terrorism and everything else. But then we've also got the threats with Russia. We've got a number of different kind of things that are still kind of looming out there. We've seen Russia's actions in Ukraine and previously in Georgia and other places. What is Trump's stance as it relates to NATO and Russia?
Well, Trump has, you know, expressed a certain amount of admiration or respect for Russian President Vladimir Putin, you know, suggesting that if he were president, U.S.-Russian relations would greatly improve. He wants more cooperation with Russia in Syria against ISIS. He's also, you know, seemed to encourage Russian hackers to hack into U.S. Computer systems or email systems, you know, including trying to find the deleted emails that Secretary Clinton deleted from her server, the, you know, the topic that has caused so much controversy. So he has advocated a much more friendlier relationship with Russia than the current policy or the policy being advocated by Secretary Clinton.
And even with this NATO, I mean, he's criticized the NATO alliance. Do you think that a Trump presidency would, you know, reengage NATO, or do you think that there would be some kind of some angst with NATO countries and NATO leaders in terms of a Trump presidency?
Well, I think there would certainly be angst among NATO leaders, European partners, European members, especially in Eastern Europe, you know, the countries that are afraid of potential Russian aggression, given what's happened in Ukraine and in Georgia in recent years, you know, countries in the Baltic states,
right.
Poland, they're very concerned, more so probably than some of the countries in Western Europe that aren't as close to Russia. You know, Trump has said or called into question, you know, whether the U.S. would come to the defense of NATO members who aren't meeting their defense spending targets. So he is certainly, you know, among major party candidates in recent decades, taken a much more skeptical or a questioning view of the utility of NATO or what U.S. obligations, you know, would actually be in the event of conflict, and also tying that in, you know, seeming to be engaged in an effort to say that, you know, European partners need to be spending more on defense. That's the position that previous administrations have taken. That's not anything new, but no one has, you know, called into question whether the U.S. would actually defend these countries if they didn't start ponying up more for defense. So that's a new approach.
We got to take a quick break. We're talking to John Harper. He is a writer, a senior writer at National Defense Magazine. He wrote an article, Clinton versus Trump, Implications for Defense. There are implications in this election on who we will choose in terms of who is going to be the commander in chief, who's going to be leading our military, who's going to be possibly putting our military into harm's way with a number of different possible conflict zones that are around there, whether it be terrorism, whether it be China, Iran, North Korea, or other situations. But we're talking about this right now. The election is coming in a few days, and so we're trying to figure out who is going to be the best person as it relates to national defense and who's going to do the right thing for our military. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about national security issues, but we're talking about national security issues as it relates to this upcoming election. All of us should be out going to vote in a few days. We want the whole country to get out and vote, so please vote. But you got to make a decision. Is mostly most people will be choosing between Clinton or people will be choosing with Trump. And in that, you'll be making decisions about our national security. And right now we're talking about which one is going to be probably the best candidate for national defense. But we're talking about it in a standpoint of what are the implications for defense. We're talking to John Harper. He wrote an article in National Defense Magazine, and you can find it at nationaldefensemagazine.org. But he wrote an article in the October issue, and you can talk about the dynamics of, you know, hey, who was the best one? But John broke this down in his article, and he broke down what are the standpoints for Trump, what's his vision for the military, and what's Hillary Clinton's vision for the military, and we're talking about that today. Hey, John, before we go into candidate Clinton, what is Trump saying? You know, the military is always talking about kind of research and development, new weapon systems and other things like that, kind of making sure the spending is going along good, whether it be DARPA or, you know, agencies who are working on stuff for our ground troops or whatever the case is. What is Trump talking about in terms of research and development of new systems, new technology, new kind of equipment for our soldiers, our Marines, our sailors, our Coast Guardsmen, our airmen and everyone else?
Well, he's certainly called for investing in new cutting-edge technologies. In terms of specifics, you know, he's really focused on cyber in terms of increasing, you know, both offensive and defensive capabilities. And I think that's certainly something that U.S. military leaders are in favor of. You know, in recent years, the Obama administration and the Pentagon have increased their spending on cyber, you know, increased capabilities on both the offensive and defensive side, and that cyber is certainly a threat that everyone is constantly warning about. So, you know, I think that's a proposal that, you know, would certainly probably have support within the defense establishment. He's also called for investing more in missile defense systems. That's also something that I think has a lot of support within the defense establishment in terms of, you know, the National Missile Defense System, which is designed to shoot down missiles that are headed towards the continental United States, as well as theater missile defense systems, which are more regional, designed to shoot down shorter range missiles or shoot down missiles, shortly after they're launched, so that they couldn't strike U.S. territory.
You know, when we look at candidate Clinton, many people say that she's just going to kind of continue on with President Obama and what he's been doing in terms of military spending and just even the way he's handled certain national security issues. What is her stance as it relates to the military and national security and spending in other areas?
Well, she has also called for lifting the sequester, which, would increase in order to increase defense spending as well as non-defense spending. Where she perhaps diverges from Mr. Trump is she would also want, increases in non-defense spending to correspond with increases in military spending. The Republican line has been, there needs to be more spending on national defense, but they aren't as inclined to increase spending for other domestic programs, education or healthcare, things like that. So there is certainly a difference there. Like Mr. Trump, she hasn't been too specific in terms of actual, top line numbers, saying, I would spend this, X amount as president. The analysts that I've talked to in Washington seem to believe that she would want to spend more money than President Obama has been spending. Secretary Clinton is considered one of the more hawkish politicians in Washington, not just for a Democrat, but just among politicians in general. She has a history of supporting a very, robust U.S. presence and engagement abroad. She's supported military intervention in places like the Balkans. She, voted for the Iraq War. She since said that she regrets that vote. But she reportedly, supported major troop level increases in Afghanistan early in the Obama administration, intervening in Libya against the Gaddafi regime. She's called for establishing a no-fly zone in Syria, something that the Obama administration has been reluctant to do because it could potentially entail shooting down Russian aircraft if they violated that no-fly zone, and that's, obviously not something that they would be eager to do out of concern that it could start a war with Russia. She's also in the past had, reportedly called for arming some of these rebel groups that are viewed as having, similar objectives to the U.S. and that region. That's something the Obama administration had also been reluctant to do, worried that advanced weapons, such as anti-aircraft weapons, could fall into the wrong hands and, later on down the road put U.S. citizens at risk. So there are, Secretary Clinton does have a history of supporting what I think could fairly be described as an interventionist foreign policy, no one expects her, I don't think, to want to decrease military spending, at least relative to Obama administration levels.
When we look at the dynamics of Hillary Clinton, like you said, she's been more hawkish. Is she talking about the same, whether it be personnel or ships or the battalions of Army or Marines or divisions? Is she talking about the same levels of increases in terms of the personnel and also kind of the equipment that we have operating the seas and other theaters?
She has not been quite as specific as Trump. She, didn't really, as far as I'm aware, give any speeches that went into the kind of detail that one of his speeches went into a few weeks ago, where he talked about increasing the size of the Navy and the Army, et cetera. She's been a little bit more vague about that. The analysts that I've talked to don't really expect any more specifics before the election. You know, they think that it will hinge more on domestic issues and just sort of broader foreign policy questions versus, you know, details about the DOD top line or specific weapons programs, things like that.
You know, when we think about all these other areas and we think about what's going on with the war on terrorism, where has Secretary Clinton, where has she been on this? I mean, she's kind of been dealing with this. She talks about, you know, her being in the Situation Room with Osama bin Laden and other areas. She's also made, you know, positive comments about what's going on with the current situation where we're going in to get ISIS and we're trying to close in on the cities. Where's her standpoint in terms of dealing with the war on terror?
Well, I think in some ways it's similar to the Obama administration. Certainly, you know, as Secretary of State, she dealt with terrorism issues throughout her tenure. She previously served on the Senate Armed Services Committee, so she's very familiar with these issues. She has favored, you know, a robust response against ISIS in terms of, you know, airstrikes, you know, having U.S. advisors there. You know, neither she nor Mr. Trump have proposed sending in a large ground force. That's probably one area that they agree on. But, you know, she certainly favors, you know, trying to go after ISIS where they are in Iraq and Syria, you know, as well as, you know, beefing up homeland defenses, you know, calling for more cooperation from the technology industry, you know, focusing on, you know, online communication, social media, that kind of thing.
You know, when we come back, I want to talk about the cyber. We've seen the impact of cyber. We've, you know, on both sides, there's been a conversation, whether it be Trump versus Clinton. There's been this talk of this, the Russian, the hacking, and all the other kind of components. We know that our military has kind of been on the main kind of the frontal spear of cyber and cyber command and all the other kind of components. I want to talk about where Secretary Clinton is kind of thinking about as it relates to cyber and other issues. We're talking to John Harper. He's a senior writer at National Defense Magazine. He wrote an article in October's issue that deals Clinton versus Trump, implications for defense. A very, very good article. Take a look at it when you get a chance. You can find their article. You can find the edition on nationaldefensemagazine.org, an October issue. We're thinking about this as we're coming up to election time. Who is going to be the right candidate for our national security? We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after that break. And you're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having an interesting conversation about national security, but really talking about national security as it relates to this election, talking about who is going to be the best person who's going to lead our military, who's going to become commander in chief. We're going to be voting in the next few days. We want to make sure that we encourage everybody to get out and vote. Please make sure that's part of the democratic process that we have here in this country. One of the best things that we ever have is that our ability to vote and choose a leader and then figure out who's going to be the best person to lead our country. But the main thing is who's going to be the best person to lead our military, who may put people in harm's way, but making sure the right decisions are being made if you do have to put people in harm's way in any of these theaters around the world. We're talking to John Harper. He's a senior writer at National Defense Magazine. You can find it at nationaldefensemagazine.org. In the October issue, he wrote a great article, Clinton versus Trump, implications for defense as you're making your decision. If you're undecided, maybe a great article for you to take a look at, especially as we think about our military and who's going to be the commander in chief of that. Hey, John, we're talking about Clinton. And when we look at it, and I was mentioned about cyber, I mean, this has been kind of the most interesting election. And I've never heard cyber mentioned as much in an election as it has been in this. What is Clinton's standpoint on cyber? And I'm sure it's a little bit more personal because of all these leaks and everything else. Has she talked about that?
Yes. I mean, she, you know, certainly favors, you know, beefing up cybersecurity. Obviously, her campaign has been hurt to a certain extent by some hacking and you know, cyber attacks that you know, maybe revealed some things that you know, she didn't necessarily you know, want out there in the public realm. And obviously there's the issue, you know, with her private server that has stirred so much controversy and questions about, you know, did she, you know, jeopardize U.S. cybersecurity or U.S. secrets? You know, certainly the Trump campaign has, you know, made, has certainly, you know, emphasized those concerns and attacked her for her cybersecurity practices, accusing her of being too lax and too secretive in that regard. You know, I think cyber is one area where there's strong bipartisan agreement in Washington about the need to beef up cyber defenses especially, but also, you know, offensive cyber tools, which the U.S. military could, you know, potentially use against adversaries in the future. You know, defense officials, you know, this is certainly one of their top concerns. I mean, they've even warned of a, you know, a cyber Pearl Harbor, you know, where the U.S. could come under attack, you know, things like the electrical grids, the financial system, you know, nuclear power plants, you know, so much of our critical infrastructure could be vulnerable. And certainly, you know, a successful major attack, it could, you know, have a significant impact on the American way of life and create a real national crisis. And also just, you know, from a military perspective, you know, DOD is, you know, trying to deal with thousands of cyber attacks against their systems, you know, every day, it seems. And, you know, they're worried that adversaries, you know, in a future war could attack U.S. military systems, you know, via cyber or electronic warfare and take them offline and significantly disrupt U.S. military operations. So I think across the board, you know, there's certainly support for increasing spending on cyber, not just from a homeland security perspective, but for, you know, military operations as well, both securing U.S. military systems and potentially, you know, having the capability to launch cyber attacks against enemy systems to shut down their systems and, you know, enable the success of future U.S. military operations. You know, so I don't know that there's a lot of daylight between the two candidates on this particular issue.
Sure. You know, when we look at China, what is Secretary Clinton talking about as it relates to dealing with China on a kind of a national security or possible military level?
Well, Secretary Clinton was one of the architects of the so-called pivot or rebalance to the Asia-Pacific. There was a feeling, you know, among some policymakers and observers that the U.S. had gotten bogged down in the Middle East since 9/11. And had, you know, ignored or perhaps not paid as much attention to issues in the Asia-Pacific as they should have. And certainly, you know, with China increasing its military capabilities, its economic might, you know, trying to increase its influence in the region and around the world, you know, some view China certainly as a potential advanced adversary that, you know, the U.S. needs to deal with. And in terms of this pivot or rebalance to the Pacific, you know, that entails shifting U.S. military forces to the region, you know, so beefing up the U.S. military presence there, expanding relationships with longtime allies like Japan, but also, you know, potential new allies like Vietnam, you know, more diplomatic engagement, you know, on an economic level, the Trans-Pacific Partnership was, you know, meant to, you know, enhance U.S. Economic influence in the region, although that, you know, has been thrown in doubt, you know, based on views on Capitol Hill and among the two candidates. Secretary Clinton now says she opposes the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as does Mr. Trump. But, you know, I think Secretary Clinton supports kind of a dual-track approach with regard to China. On one hand, supporting diplomatic engagement, you know, as a former Secretary of State, that was obviously, you know, a big aspect of her job. But at the same time, trying to shore up U.S. alliances with its defense partners in the region, such as Japan, South Korea, Australia, and also, you know, you could see her potentially taking a harder line against China than perhaps the Obama administration, although she hasn't explicitly said that. But certainly just, you know, given her view, I think, of, you know, her history of taking sort of an interventionist approach, if you will, could potentially portend a harder line against China.
Right. A lot to think about. Unfortunately, we've got to end it here, John. You've given us a whole bunch to think about, and your article really kind of gives us a whole bunch to kind of dive into as we're thinking about this kind of stuff. We've been talking to John Harper, and thank you so much, John, for this insight. We've been talking to John Harper. He is a senior writer at National Defense Magazine. If you want to find it, you know, either Google National Defense Magazine or, again, nationaldefensemagazine.org, a magazine of the National Defense Industrial Association. Great magazine, but great article by John that really talks about the implications for defense as it relates to this election, Clinton versus Trump. Who is thinking about what as it relates to our military, our spending, our national security priorities, and other things like that. As you prepare to go to the polls, and we encourage you to vote, please take a look at this article. Please think about things as it relates to the future of the country, and we'll kind of take it from there. We'll have a lot to talk about when the election is over. So, John, we're probably going to be hitting you up after the election is over, because there's going to be plenty to talk about after we figure out who the new president is. Thank you so much for being on Fed Access.
Thank you, Derek. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.